Welcome to ScotsCast, the Bible teaching podcast of Scots Church Melbourne.
In 2018, social researcher Mark McCrindle surveyed 1,024 ordinary Australians and asked them what it is that most puts them off Christianity. What was it most that made Christianity on the nose? At about the same time, in his column in The Australian, Bernard Salt was asking the question, how will future generations look back at this present decade? He said, on his analysis, there is a social change going on that's just as profound as the winds of change that swept through the 1960s. Now, this is 3 years ago, and he was right. He saw a looming loss of faith in social institutions, including government and banks, and of course the church. And it was all backed up by that McCrindle research data. Among McCrindle's sample group, there was a subgroup of 266 non-Christians, they called themselves, who said they were actually open to being persuaded about faith. And then he drills down and he asks that group, what kind of behaviours do you see in the Christian church that most likely stop you from exploring Christianity anymore? In other words, faith blockers. Here's what he found. Abuse was obviously the biggest, 57%. And why wouldn't it be with the things we see in the media? Hypocrisy, number two, a blocker for 47%, the fact that so many who claim to be Christian act otherwise. Then, coming in on a robust 43%, judging others. The way Christians, hypocrites as they are, tend to be so judgy of everybody else. Now, if you're here this morning and you're a Christian as I am, which you might be relieved to know as I'm the pastor, but it's worth asking why? Why have we as a movement got such a reputation for judging everyone else, including one another? Why is it that the first word that comes to mind when you say the word Christian to 43% of Australians is the word judgmental? Because it is a breathtaking reversal of the way it's meant to be. When you stop and take notice, for example, of the actual words of Jesus himself and then these later words of James. So just a reminder before we turn to James, Jesus himself in Luke chapter 6, verse 37 says this, do not judge, and you will not be judged. He really said that. There's more, keep reading. Do not condemn, and you will not be condemned. Forgive, and you will be forgiven. Give, and it will be given to you. A good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over, will be poured into your lap. For with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. Now again, can I assure you, Jesus really did say that stuff. And he meant it. And James picks up exactly the same ball and runs with it. It's explicit from the passage that Howard just read in verses 11 and 12. Don't speak evil against one another, brothers. The one who speaks against the brother or judges his brother speaks evil against the law and judges the law. But if you judge the law, you're not a doer of the law, but a judge. There is only one lawgiver and judge, he who is able to save and to destroy. But who are you to judge your neighbour? Speaking against or judging a brother. Verse 11. Who are you to judge your neighbour? Verse 12. which is the question we're going to focus on in the passage this morning. But in context, will you notice, James is writing to what seems to be a particularly argumentative bunch of very Jewish Christians who seem to be fighting all the time, to the point where you'd be wondering, if you think back on the previous chapters, whether they are interested in living their faith at all, or whether it's just lip service. That's the problem, you might remember if you were here the last few weeks, that he raised back in chapter 2. What's the point of saying you have faith in Jesus if you're not at any point going to live it? This is James who said back in chapter 1, make sure you are doers of the word and not just hearers. And apart from playing out in the way they treat the poor, and apart from playing out in the way they should be using their tongues, which we saw last week, it is very much going to play out in the way they treat one another. So listen again in verses 1 and 2 of our passage today and consider, is this the sort of church you'd even want to be part of? What causes quarrels? And what causes fights among you? Is it not this, that your passions are at war within you? You desire and do not have, so you murder, you covet and cannot obtain. So you fight and quarrel. Now look, I've been to some pretty awkward church meetings in my time. None, thankfully, where there's been any murdering going on. And commentators tend to say that James is using a bit of hyperbole there, given that Jesus said famously that to hate your brother in your heart is the same as killing him. And yet significant, if you go back to the book of Acts, this is a time of real foment. Jews against Jewish Christians, against Gentile Christians, and so hostile over issues like observance of the Jewish laws. Who knows if it sometimes turned violent? But here's the point, they all want their own way. And they all, if you think back to chapter 2, want to be upwardly mobile in the prosperity sense, as they show favouritism to the rich and look down at the poor. And they covet, and they want, and they fight, and they quarrel. And they miss the whole point of the kingdom of God. What if up was down and down was up? What if our values needed to be totally reordered? What if crucifixion was coronation? What if poor was rich and rich was poor? What if giving was really getting? What if God really is opposed to the proud and gives grace to the humble instead? What would you need to change in your own attitudes if you were truly persuaded of those things? James is blunt. You ask and do not receive because you ask wrongly to spend it on your passions. You adulterous people, do you not know that friendship with the world is enmity with God? Therefore, whoever wishes to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God. And then verse 5. You see, God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble. So then James follows with a string from verses 7 to 11 of 10 Greek words that in the original Greek all have the same suffix, all have the same ending. The letters TE in the Greek, which indicate in Greek grammar, this is your useless fact for the morning to take home, but in Greek grammar they are imperatives. In other words, they are all words of command. They are direct instructions. And you'd hear it in the Greek in the kind of rhyme or the rhythm, te, 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 10 times at the end of the words, saying, submit yourself to God. Resist the devil. Draw near to God. Cleanse yourself. Purify yourself. A note of urgency, of demand, of command. Be wretched. Mourn. Cry. Because the way you're treating each other is nothing to laugh about. Humble yourselves, he says, because this is a mess. In essence, verse 11, stop speaking evil against one another. See, three steps. Get things right before God. Consciously turn away from the devil. And there is a consequence of that. Sort out the way you treat one another. Humble yourself. Let God lift you up instead, verse 10. Humble yourselves before the Lord and he will exalt you. Leave the rest to him. James says, stop putting one another down because judging one another is exactly what the Lord Jesus told us not to do. Which, for these law-affirming Jewish Christians, but affirming in words and not actions, shows they're not really affirming their law at all, and especially not the royal law that we saw before, of loving one another. Just take a look again at verse 11. Do not speak evil against one another, brothers. The one who speaks against a brother or judges his brother speaks evil against the law and judges the law. Now, here's the thing, and it's treading on unpopular ground, I know, but James is about to talk about God's judgment. And culturally, and even in Christian culture, except for a certain kind of crazy-eyed, fire-and-brimstone preacher you might hear on the street, but it is not something we like to talk about, or even believe. We shove it aside. But again, here's the thing. If you've got a passion for justice, if you think that at some point wrong should be punished and the scales need to be balanced, then if you stop believing in God's justice, the only other option is to start judging other people ourselves and getting even. The theologian Miroslav Volf says that ultimately evil must be separated from good because he says logically causes of violence have got to be removed if ultimate peace is ever to be established. And Jesus himself says, not just the grumpy Old Testament, Jesus himself says the day is going to come when evil will finally be crushed in all its forms. But, most significantly, we leave it to God. And we don't do it ourselves. Evil will be brought to a final end. But it's not your job, and it's not my job. Now, this is a quirky thought, but hear it out. It is because God will judge that we don't. It is because God says, vengeance is mine, I will repay, that we don't. And we patiently forbear while accounts remain unpaid, even though we're longing for justice. Miroslav Volf, he says this. He says, final judgment is not merely a grim and regrettable necessity. It's a keystone of social cohesion in the present. He says it might seem paradoxical at first sight, but the Bible's picture of final judgment means that justice will be exhaustively done by God in the end, and so does not have to be exhaustively done by us right now. Wolf says, try preaching that in a war zone. Try preaching a sermon on non-retaliation in a war zone scarred by devastation, plunder, and rape. letting God even the scales. He says, demands we have a doctrine of final judgment. And it's not just if you live in a war zone, is it? If you've ever suffered injustice, if you've ever been spoken about unfairly, or if you just haven't had the last word that you really wanted to have, it is incredibly difficult to live in the hope of final justice that frees us from desperately wanting to get even right now. It's hard to live with the idea that vengeance belongs to God and not to us, that he'll be the one to even the scales. It's hard to live out that proverb that says, don't say, I will repay evil, wait for the Lord, and he will deliver you. That's exactly the point, isn't it, that James is making in verse 12. There's only one lawgiver and judge, he who is able to save and destroy. But who are you to judge your neighbour? Saving and destroying, it's God's job, not yours and mine. Overcoming evil on the last day, trust him and get on with the business of love and forbearance instead of speaking against and judging your brothers and sisters and neighbours. Which doesn't mean, I think, overlooking appropriate discipline or turning a blind eye to things like abuse. Doesn't mean anything goes. James himself is just let loose those 10 imperatives for godly living, but it does mean putting aside our own passions to have things our way, putting aside coveting, personal retribution. It does mean putting aside the sort of judgmentalism and griping and backbiting that we know in our hearts is so divisive and wrong, yet somehow is so very appealing to our darker sides. God, who sees everything, will put right the balance. Stop acting as if you have got some sort of higher perspective that lets you look down on everybody else. Stop feeling that you are the gold standard for the rest of the world. Fundamentally, James says, and he's very much echoing Jesus, be to other people the way God is to you. And yes, he will judge, and we should wait for that. But ultimately remember that God's justice is tinged with a huge dose of mercy as well. The way of forgiveness, the cross. Whereas those with allegiance to Jesus, we're promised that our judgment is turned aside because it's fallen on him instead. But again, all the more reason that having been shown that grace, all the more odd if we're not the people who show that same grace to others as well. How did we ever get the idea that Christianity was meant to be about judging everybody else and telling them how wrong they are, instead of modelling forgiveness and giving and love and patiently waiting for God to sort out the rest? It's just as if we started out with Jesus and yet somewhere along the way, maybe very early on, considering these words of James, maybe very early on it seems we switched and decided maybe we should try the Pharisee model instead. Maybe, given how early James is writing his letter, maybe the idea of grace to one another was just so counterintuitive that the idea hardly took flight at all in the first Jewish church. And so James has to write to them and remind them so strongly. Friend, maybe you're here this morning and you have had experiences where people have looked down on you and been critical and you have felt they judged you like that. because perhaps you never quite acted religious enough to pass muster. Or you didn't know quite the right words. Or you made mistakes and didn't somehow measure up. Clearly, if that has been your experience, it shouldn't have been. Sadly, more likely, if that's been your experience, you're not here today because you left years ago. But to finish on a more positive note, given that historically we've so often got things so badly wrong, it's kind of amazing that there's anyone still here at all. And in spite of what James says, we so often don't listen to him. And at our worst, we fight and we squabble and we judge and we divide. And yet, maybe, just maybe, there are lots of Christians around who are very much committed to listening to Jesus, who very much know that they are just forgiven sinners depending on God's mercy, which means they're merciful themselves in the way they treat everyone they meet. And if you're hearing this today and you're not a Christian yourself and you've heard the critique and you've seen what judgmental religion can look like, maybe if you would just hold off your own judgment for just a moment and consider. Because here's another slightly more positive statistic from McCrindle research. It's one thing to have a general perception that Christians are judgmental. But then Mark McCrindle turned and asked the same 1,024 ordinary Australians, do you actually know a Christian personally? If you do, what are they like? And an astonishing 92% of them said they do know at least one Christian personally. And look, sure, there are negatives, because there's a bit of Pharisee in all of us. But 41% said caring was the first word that came to mind. 35% said loving. 35% used words like kind, honest, faithful. Which I reckon must mean there are loads of Christians out there who are actually taking Jesus seriously, doing what he said, taking account of words like these from James, being merciful because they've found God's mercy themselves, leaving the judging to him. So friends, can I urge you with a few imperatives of my own? Let's live that out here in the life of Scots Church and get out there in the Melbourne community and do likewise.
You've been listening to Scotscast, the Bible teaching podcast of Scots Church Melbourne.